came in peace for all mankind. Welcome back to the NASA vending machine, which is hackable, apparently. I'm Jason Snell, and joining
don't
me as
tell
always
anyone
is Dan Morin. Hello.
Hi.
Let's hack into the
Hi,
vending
Jason.
Machine.
Don't hack into this show, though. This show is sacrosanct.
No. It's episode 4 of season 5 of For All Mankind, Open Source, in which we learn that Alex hacked into the vending machines and got free stuff.
Free soda.
Yeah.
And didn't get in trouble.
Almost got suspended.
Almost.
Yeah.
Well, when you're the grandson of Ed Baldwin and your mom owns part of Helios, you ask for no special treatment, but you get special
you're
treatment.
You're going to get noticed. You're going to get special treatment. That was a really funny thing. Anyway, we'll get to all of it. Talking about this very, very interesting. Like we were talking last week about, that's it for Ed. Like turn the page, new generation, and this show is doing exactly that. Right?
Off we go.
Like, turn the page. What wacky hijinks will Alex get into now that Ed is gone?
Live up to the Baldwin name.
Need some new Baldwins, and we got them. We've also got a new Gordo, but we'll get there.
Oh man, that was a bit of. I saw in the credits there was a new actor listed.
Yeah,
because I was curious. I watched the credits in this episode because I was like, who gets top billing now that Joel Kinnaman's gone? And the answer is Toby Kebbell, who plays Miles. There was another actor at the end who I didn't remember seeing in the previous credits earlier this season, and that is a character we will meet very close to the beginning of the episode.
Yeah, it's
Avery.
It is Avery, but let's break this down. There's an Ed Shrine at the Promenade Zocalo.
He's not totally gone.
It's like a month later, I think they say. There's an old Alex says, "Oh, he used to read this old paperback to me." Totally inappropriate for children, but yep. I'm sure Ed did the thing where he edited it as he read it.
Sure Ed did not do that.
Yeah,
I looked
not.
Up this book because I was curious. The Sand Pebbles. It's an account of a gunboat going down the Yangtze or something.
Oh yeah. Well, then he totally would do the whole thing.
He totally read the entire thing. Yeah. American Richard McKenna writes about a Yangtze River gunboat and its crew in 1926.
Sounds like Ed. That's his sort of thing.
They made it into a Steve McQueen movie, apparently. So yeah.
So let's follow Alex and Kelly a little bit, and then we'll get back to some of the other threads here. So Alex is going to start his job at Helios. He is staying on Mars. His friends are going to be headed off, but he's going to stay there and he's going to work at Helios. And this does lead to that very funny moment of like, why would you get special treatment? He's like, I don't expect any special treatment. And it's like, why would you get any, which is very funny, and then his coworkers are looking at him, and it's all very funny. Of course, the reason is that at the end of the day, Dev shows up and says, "Come with me,
come to my office." That actress is Anjali Bimani, who has showed up in a bunch of things, including Miss Marvel, and she's a well-known D&D streamer, which I think is very, very fun.
That's awesome.
Because she works with Critical Role and the like, so she's a bit of a well-known character actor. I also liked, Jason, I immediately tweaked to the fact that her character is named Ms. Joshi, and it made me immediately think of, we just watched, this will date this a little bit, but Blade Runner 2049, in which Robin Wright's character is named Lieutenant Joshi.
Oh, interesting.
So, anyways.
I was just thinking of Listener Mihir.
Ah, yes, that's true. So I'm imagining not an uncommon surname, but still, it made me think of Blade Runner.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's see. So Alita lands on Mars because a month has passed. The answer to the question, how long does it take to get to Mars? A month.
That's a long time.
Kelly greets her. Dev comes and gets Alex. He has a big vision for a city on Mars that is truly self-sufficient that they're going to build. Alex has a bunch of suggestions. Alex, not cowed by Dev because he's known Dev. So he's like, yeah, it would be cool if you did this. And like, this is a thing that people, it could be flexible and you can move this thing around and more organic and let people kind of make the space their own. And that might make it work better. And then he's like, oh, sorry, dude. I didn't want to, I'm not criticizing your cool city idea. I had some thoughts about it. And Dev does the great thing, which is like, well, what you're describing will cost millions of dollars. However, if you can make a case and have it be reasonable, we'll do it. which is great. And he's like, but Miss Joshi has me looking up database items. And he's like, forget her. Just work on this.
My two moments on this is, one, Dev does give him a little bit of a dagger stare.
He does.
And I liked my favorite. There's a couple good Dev-related lines in this one. My favorite from Dev is, it's dangerous to give people too many options.
Yeah.
Which I really enjoyed. And also, it is interesting because what we've set up here is Dev, despite all his talk about Mars and independence, is fundamentally, you know, he's a guy from Earth and he came out here and he wants to kind of, he's a visionary, but he wants to impose his vision, right?
Yeah,
I'm going to grant you this grand vision and I've designed it perfectly. Mm-hmm. And Alex is the person who grew up on Mars and was born on Mars and is like, yeah, we kind of just want to do our own thing, like
really
not
work.
Do the thing you tell us to do.
Yeah, which is, and I think you could argue though in that moment what you're seeing in Dev is, how dare you? This is my idea. Wait a second. Maybe this kid is onto something. This makes my idea better. And it's that, I mean, Dev being a tech billionaire, you know, he's modeled on all sorts of different characters like that. But
a
I
lot
would
of
say
Steve Jobs
this
there.
Is a Steve
a
Jobs
Steve
moment.
Jobs.
This is a Steve Jobs moment where Dev goes through the whole like, how dare you? This is my idea. It's great. I think your idea may be better. Great. It's my idea now. Right. And that was a very Steve Jobs kind of thing to do. So that's an interesting little data point. Alita and Kelly need a drink. Alita swears to Kelly she tried to save the Korolev crater funding but couldn't. Kelly reveals all the issues with the team she has to work with, which is great because Alita's like, no, I'm sure it's fine. Because they're all Helios, right? I'm sure it's fine. And Kelly's like, no, they hate me. It's really like she gets her up to speed right away. It's like, no, they hate me. Yeah. But they keep on saying, I'll just, you know, just another drink more. It is cold outside, to be fair. And so then she wakes up hungover with Alex brings her aspirin and coffee, which is really nice. And she's like, okay, oh, are you going over to Helios? Well, give me 5 minutes. And then she tries to stand up and she's like, give me 10 minutes. And he looks at his watch. He's like, oh, geez. Okay, fine. Whatever.
I love the number of TV shows in which you will see people, offer and take aspirin simply because it is a generic that has no trademark.
Yes.
Even though most people do not take aspirin anymore.
Yeah. That
and generally, they don't want you to. But in this case, we can't say, have some Tylenol.
Have some Tylenol. Have some Advil. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Let's see. I'm gonna skip some stuff and come back to it. Alita does eventually slowly hungover go to Dev. She's offered coffee multiple times. She finally says yes because she walks into Dev's office with coffee. She looks out at the view. Helios appears to be like, that building appears to be like built into the
rock,
the mountainside or the cave side or whatever it is.
But it looks out over
Happy Valley.
Yeah.
Dev gives her a hug, says, I'm glad you're finally here, but I wanted you to, you know, have a moment to drink it in. And she gets right to it. She's like, okay, Helios is being totally dysfunctional because, you know, you're up here doing pronouncements when I'm trying to hold the company together. And he talks about how he has these reactions and you're worried about getting stabbed in the back. And she says, I assure you, Dev, I will stab you in the front.
Which is very Alita. I like this bit too, where he's like, all right, you want to keep talking about your feelings or do you want to get down to work? None of this feels like it really resolved any. I mean, he got it out in the open, but also Dev is going to keep deving if sure feels like.
That's why
like
he's so happy she's there, is that now she can clean up for him in person.
Yeah. Oh,
boy. Also, I think, I do think that that's part of Dev's dynamic. I think Dev's dynamic is, I want a competent person to run the show, then I will do what I want. And it's not so much that like they'll sweep up after me, but it's like
they're a little bit in the wake too, right? Like he has this idea where he's like, I am gravity, right? I am the sun. And if I keep saying we're building a city on Mars, sooner or later you will have nothing. There's nothing you can do but make it happen because I'm going to keep saying it. So I thought that was a real like, Dev is, it's very unstoppable force meets a movable object kind of situation where he just keeps plowing ahead and doing what he wants to do. Got some questions based on where this episode ends, but we'll get there.
Yeah, exactly. Let's see. So coffee. Oh yeah, no, they're shifting gears, right? She leaves her coffee on the table, by the way, which is like she totally should have gone and picked up that coffee because she needs it. So Kurgan.
Yeah.
And she says, like, they know details about Titan's atmosphere. How'd they get that data? And Deb says, I'll get it, which is super suspicious, right? He's like, I'll get it. She's like, well, we can't go if you don't get it. He says, oh, no, I'll get it. Again, we talked about Steve Jobs. We talked about how they have Newtons here. I got to say it because this is set in 2012. Ah. A lot of classic Apple keyboards and mice getting a workout in these scenes.
And the iMacs.
And iMacs.
2012 era iMacs. I noticed that with the little, I used to have one of those, the little rounded backs and everything. Yeah. I love that because Apple makes this show, they're really, do you guys just need a bunch of 2012 era iMacs? Because we can just get those for you.
I think the producers of this show really love the idea that there's this historic Apple tech that they have. Some of it real, some of it fake. I think they really love that.
It's great. I really enjoy it. I love that they are, I don't know if there is somebody from Apple who's like, oh, we'll get you the right stuff or make sure that it's the right stuff for that age. But like, that's my keyboard, I'm pretty sure. I've got one right, I'm using it right now.
Yeah. I think there must be a contact at Apple who is in charge of making them, you know, helping them get all this stuff right.
But continuity editing, I love it.
Alex is on his iMac, is curious about these files on the server that he's supposed to look at. You know, he's looking at a particular server for all this data, and there's files marked in Cyrillic that say automation. And he can't get into them. And his boss basically says, oh, you got to have a M6 clearance for that. And, you know, it took me months to get it. So you don't look at those files, kid. This is when his friend from high school says,
Lily,
right. She's like, why are you going to let that stop you? You hacked into the vending machines and we got free soda.
It's the same thing. Getting free soda is the same as hacking into secured government files.
Database. Yeah that's going to be fine. So Alita, in a funny scene, Alita, a woman from Helios comes into her office, hands her some files, and she says, thank you, knock next time. And she's like, oh, Dev likes us to have an open door policy here. And she says, well, I don't have an open door policy.
But I wrote down the exact quote. It's, Dev doesn't really believe in closed doors.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was another good Dev. Of course he doesn't.
Of course he doesn't.
Except his office had doors, I'll notice earlier. When they let Alita into his office, his office has doors that close.
But they're unlocked. Hmm. Kurgan, this company that we've only, you know, known a little bit, but they're competing with Helios. Some people from Kurgan are coming right before the launch of the Titan thing, which she's sort of suspicious of. So what's this all about? Alex, back to our hacker. Alex goes to his boss's iMac, Ms. Joshi. He gets right in to look at the files, but access denied. So I had that moment where I'm like, this seems awfully insecure, but it's like, oh, but whatever her access card is or whatever, that's not actually active right now. So he sticks in a USB key and gets to cracking. And what he finds is a trove of documents that show a plan between Kurgan and Helios to agree to replace 98% of the people on Mars with automation for mining purposes. And then the plan is that once they fully automate iridium mining, they will send all the people on Mars home over time. Alita shows up, terrifies Alex, but she doesn't know that it's not his desk. While he's copying the files off, he puts down Ms. Joshi's
picture of her with her dog.
Picture. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I think that's an actual picture of her. I think I've seen that picture of her with her dog before, which I think is very funny.
So they have a little chat, and then, you know, what he reveals to Lily is the automation is... This is the off-the-book stuff being shipped in, is the automation tools. That's what Kurgan has been doing. And she's like, we got to let people know. And he's like, I got to talk to Dev. And she's like, Dev's the problem. He must have been behind this. It's all part of the plan, man. We got to fight the power. Okay.
Yeah, I'm curious. This whole thing is very interesting, right? Because I was wondering at first, why is this on the Helios servers? But then we see when they show us some of the documents that this is a deal between M6 Helios and Kurgan. So...
Yes.
So, and then my question is, wait, so is Dev full of crap, basically?
It's a good question.
We don't know.
It's a good question. So in the, and I'm going to skip over a couple of things here that we'll get back to in a minute, to the last scene, First off, great moment. Aleta walks into the Mars Mission Control for the Titan launch and puts on the headset. And I'm like, she's been in Mission Control before, people. She knows how this works.
She knows what's happening.
She gets a picture of who the Kurrigan people are who are visiting. One of them is Irina, the KGB handler who ran Roscosmos.
She was Margo's handler and then ran Roscosmos.
Yeah, she's coming to the launch. That's great. The launch happens.
I like they have a glossy picture, by the way, of the delegation.
Yeah,
like,
late by 10.
Little PR.
Headshot. Yeah. The launch happens, which is cool. They've got the like the vertical takeoff, and then they engage the rear, and they kind of like take off into space. It's cool. It's just like, we got it working.
I'm impressed that they did it in the amount of time between these two episodes. Last episode, they're like, Kelly's like wandering around in Sojourner, and it's like stuff's all ripped out and there's wires everywhere, and they're like, a month later, this thing's ready to go.
I was gonna say,
like, wow.
The difference between this show and some other science fiction shows is other shows there would have been an episode about them fixing the spaceship.
Retrofixing it, yes.
And it's just not important to moral mankind. Yeah. And I would love to see that episode, but
it would be fun. But
this show is not.
You only got a few episodes. You got 10 episodes, right? You don't want to blow an entire one on the spaceship.
And then in our.
It's been rechristened, though. It's now Sojourner T.
Yes.
For Titan.
For Titan. So the launch happens, and then we will get back to what happens at the very last moment of the episode when we double back, because I want to talk about that part of it. Which I guess, if we can back up, I'll talk about our governor a little bit, just to say.
Yes.
So the missions are launching soon. There are protests in the USSR.
Yep.
The governor is being chewed out by the higher ups back home and saying that the Kurrigan program must advance. Suspicious. Yeah.
So he knows something about that.
Exactly. He blames Lee and the Ed Baldwin Memorial for distracting people. And what his wife says is, I mean, there's a lot of like sex play going on here where it's like, remember we used to have parties when we did launches and then we met at a party and all of that. And they're kind of getting, they're thinking / foreplaying all at once. It's a thing that's happening. This is just what we're going to be like with him and his wife. Maybe we should throw a big party for the Titan launch to get people unified again, which is not a bad like psychological.
Bread and circuses.
Yeah, that's exactly the idea. So, at that party, the governor gives a good pitch. He introduces the Titan crew. Alex is there. Alex, having seen the documents now, sees Dev and they nod and he looks at the crowd. Later he's back at home looking at Ed's Purple Heart. Kelly comes in and says, you know, we're going to do a spaghetti night in honor of Ed, but it's very clear what's happening here, which is Alex is having that moment of like, am I going to be like my grandpa and make trouble and release the files, which leads to the last scene where the governor's wife still being slinky, still, you know, doing what she's doing, but he's getting a lot of texts, so many texts that you can't deny it, even when they're about to get it on. And it's the news breaking that the secret automation files have now been released. The word is out, and we get to see a lot of bubbles in whatever passes for notification center on devices on Mars in 2012 on
bling,
For All Mankind.
Bling, bling, bling. A couple things I noticed. One, the original story, which we see from Lily and Alex looking at on a laptop, not bylined. Or at least any place that we're shown. So I guess she did just give it to her editor, which is not like she got the scoop and go, oh, you found these files. You get to write it up, kid. No, they're not letting her do that, probably.
She just got arrested.
Yeah. I think it's interesting. This is where we talked a little bit in the last episode about the position of our governor, Lenya. It's interesting, right? Because he's got ties to Kurrigan. He's got political ambitions in the USSR, but he's also the head of Mars. And so throwing a party for the Titan launch is kind of weird because it's a private enterprise. And I guess the argument is, well, it's launching from Mars.
From Mars.
And we are proud of it. Like, but it's almost like it's weird because it's like, well, but also there's a Russian thing launching from Earth at the same time, basically.
Right.
And so you're kind of taking this.
Kurrigan is present on. They're building the space elevator, right?
Yeah.
So
it's very weird, and I think it's intended to be very weird and uncomfortable to a certain degree that he's essentially using this entirely like manipulation for the masses.
Yeah, he just wants people to
stop bugging him, man. Yeah. So I thought that was an interesting sort of, there's lots of layers going on with him, and the more we see of him, the less I trust him.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, we know why he's doing what he's doing now, which is he really works for the Soviet Union. And he needs to be viewed positively so he can get a better job.
Yep.
All right. We have left one thread unthreaded. I'm going to do it now. This is back on Earth. What? I had a moment where they like just shot. It was like Camp Pendleton, San Diego.
Yeah, I was like, what?
I'm like, oh, it's Earth. I remember Earth.
Outside.
Camp Pendleton. There. It is a Marine having a job interview. She is tough as nails. She's being interrogated basically for this job interview. They ask her about her father, and they're like, no, we mean your biological father. And she's like, I never knew him. And it is revealed at this point that she is the baby left behind by Danny Stevens. Danny, our most problematic for all mankind character, who left his beautiful bride behind. He cheated on her. He became, you know, he had sex with Karen, if you remember that earlier on.
Way back.
I try to forget, but it's there.
Yep.
He was high when they were having a very white-knuckling mission. So Danielle put him out and exiled him to Lee's old North Korean capsule, and he begged to come back, and they said he couldn't, and he ended up killing himself on the surface of Mars. So Danny, remember Danny, and he did leave behind a child, and Danielle felt really guilty about everything that went down with Danny Stevens. This is Avery. This is that baby, now a Marine, who is applying to go to space. So that's I did do some Danny Stevens refresh, but there it is.
I was trying to run the math there because, like, I guess she's young, but because we only really met her as a baby. Do we even see her as a toddler? Like,
no, but that Danny storyline kind of left Earth behind, and he went to Mars, and so there's probably. I mean, I think it probably. I'm sure they did the math.
Somewhere.
I think it
yeah,
works.
Yeah, yeah. She's fairly young though. She's probably. I mean, she's in the Marine Corps, right? It seems like she probably joined right out of
18, 20, something like that.
Yeah.
So this is Avery. She goes by Avery Jarrett, but she's, you know, secretly Stevens. She's at a bar in San Diego. I don't know where they shot this exterior, but I love it because there is a bar that looks kind of like that there that you may have seen in Top Gun. They are absolutely 100% going for the Top Gun reference where they do You've Lost That Loving Feeling and all of that. That is what they're trying to do here. As somebody who has spent a lot of time in San Diego, this is what they're trying to do here. The vibe on the exterior and on the interior is very much Marines at a bar in San Diego. Where have we seen that before? The answer is Top Gun. What we learn in this scene is she's got a short fuse because she gets a little bit of mockery from some of her fellow Marines, and she just like starts
slapping people.
Yeah, yeah. So she's got a short fuse. This is why she's unpopular.
And she also doesn't drink, I think, which is relevant.
Right. They mock her. She's just drinking Coke.
And they call her, they suggest she's an alcoholic, which I think probably, again, having a father, if she had a biological father who was an addict, then she may just be avoiding drinking alcohol.
Exactly.
And that may come to play. Who knows?
Who knows? So now I have to say, a couple weeks ago, I misremembered what happened to Danielle because I think I said that she was in jail or something. She's not. She just went home after her conflict.
She got shot. Yeah.
Yes, and she goes back to Earth. Well, guess what? Hey,
yay,
Danielle, welcome back, Danielle, to For All Mankind. Because here she is, because our Avery is going to visit with Danielle, who lives apparently in the San Diego area, which is great. So
I feel they were
so welcome,
much
Chris
more,
Marshall, back to the show.
I feel they were much nicer to Chris Marshall with the ravages of time than either Ed or Margot. She does not look nearly as old as either of them.
They let her have some wrinkles, but she's aged well. We see her granddaughter in the background at one point. But this is so in a real surprise, we get to see Danielle. And Avery is mad, and she's like, "What did you say to them?" This is a kid with a lot of anger. She's just So they have a conversation. She's like, it's okay. You just need to tell them. You just tell the truth. You get getting a second polygraph, which is what she was being mocked by at the bar in San Diego. It's fine. It means you're still in the running for this job that you want. Just, you know, keep it real. Tell the truth. I believe in you. She's really encouraging. And you get the sense that Danielle is like a leveler for Avery. Like,
yeah.
Danielle... She can she's go to there, Danielle right? when she's yeah. overwhelmed, like she does on her motorcycle, and Danielle will put it all in perspective, which is really great.
Right. You get the feeling Danielle has been there for her,
yes.
right, over yes. her childhood and her life,
yes.
and like she is, like we hear her parents mentioned, but we don't see them, right, her mom and her stepdad.
I believe it's actually in the text of the show when she goes back to Earth that one of the things is she feels really guilty about Danny. Mm. And so I think that one of the things, her plan is not just to be reunited with her family and see her grandchildren, but also to support Danny's family, that because it went so bad, like she was ultimately responsible for locking him up, which drove him to the point where he killed himself. So like she feels responsibility there. Obviously she is an important part of Avery's support system, which is sweet. Also, she says, I'm surprised you've got that, because Danielle has a picture of Ed with some flowers in front of it. And she said, you know, you get to my age, love, hate, they're not so different. And it's just that moment, again, that I think this show talking about generations and people changing as they grow old, I think it's just a really beautiful moment. Like, we all know, as viewers of this show, everything that went on between Danielle and Ed. And, like, they had big conflicts, but they also had some amazing, beautiful moments. Like, it's a big picture and complicated,
right.
And she's honoring and remembering Ed, and it's not, you know, an endorsement of all of Ed's works. It is that it's more complicated than you kids could ever believe, is what she's saying.
I remember there. Remember how much time they spent on the moon?
Hi, Bob.
Hi, Bob. With Gordo locked up there for like forever. I mean,
exactly.
Yeah, there's a lot of history, right?
Exactly.
There's a lot of history, and some of it's good, and some of it's bad. But you know. They were important people in each other's lives, and that is worth commemorating to her mind. And so, I agree.
Nice
I
moment.
Think that makes a lot of sense from where she is.
Nice moment. Also, speaking like we did, I think, last time about who's left.
Yes.
And I know Chris Marshall was in season one recurring and then became a regular. But like this is an answer, which is, well, I don't think Chris Marshall is going to be in the show like every episode now. I think this might have been a
but
one-off.
We might see her. We might see her one more time or something.
Maybe, but like, here's another one of those basically original characters. That is still around. So they're out there. You know, some of them are ghosts that we only see as Ed dies. But also, Margot's in prison, and then meanwhile, Danielle is just having a lovely time in San Diego with her grandkids.
Yeah.
I love it.
Good for her. Living her best life.
Good for her. So the Marines back at the bar. The Marines who got in the fight with Avery before, apologize. We were drunk. We let things get out of hand. We're sorry about that. And she reveals that she passed the exam, at which point they say, Tabasco's going to the moon.
Tabasco's going to the moon. I assume because she's spicy?
Yeah.
I don't really know where they were.
Yeah, I think that's literally it, is that she's coming in a little hot. She's a little spicy.
But I like that everybody cheers for her, and like we get over that. So I was a little surprised because she doesn't apologize. Like, ah, really sorry, I punched you in the face. You know, like, nope. They're all just like, sorry, we were drunk. I felt like that. You want that apology maybe to go in both directions.
Nope.
But
they know not to even go.
Yeah,
there.
She's
so
yeah.
If you had told me, and I would have believed it, because that was part of the pitch of this show. It's like, this show's going to take place over many decades, and you're going to end up with different characters, and you're probably going to end up seeing the children and grandchildren of characters coming into the show. I would have been like, how's that going to work? Is it going to be just like, well, this year we've got some new Baldwins and some new Stevenses and all of that. And so I like the artfulness of how they've done it, because now here we are, season 5, episode 4. And yes, indeed, we apparently have two important characters in the show being Ed's grandson and Gordo's granddaughter,
who feel like they are headed. I don't know if we're going to see them together, because so Avery's going to the moon.
To the moon, I guess.
Yeah, not to Mars, but it still feels like they'll cross paths.
Well, and Marines,
I mean, we don't know.
Marines,
yeah, Marines
why do
Mars.
We need the
yeah.
Marines, right?
Well, they had a big fight on Mars that were on the moon that time. Feels like
yeah,
there's still some tension simmering there.
My concern, so bringing the Marines into it, my concern yeah. is there's going to be unrest on Mars and they're going to send in the Marines.
Send in the Marines, yeah.
Which could be real bad.
And we also know that the Soviet Union seems like it is slowly collapsing, right? It's, you know, 30 years later at this point than the actual
yeah.
collapse of the Soviet Union, but the Mars is basically slowing down the iridium shipments, which is causing
oh, right.
unrest.
I didn't mention that, but yeah, there's a news brief that suggests yeah, there are protests in the USSR that are happening. So while the governor is getting chewed out, they're under a lot of pressure, so there's potentially unrest in the Soviet Union.
Yeah,
that
so there's instability in that part, on that vector, but like you said, Mars is also seeming like a bit of a hot spot right now.
Yeah.
And you know, with this revelation at the end of this week's episode, which I think I'm glad that I kind of thought like, all right, are they going to hold this right? Like, you know, and then it's going to come out at some, because, you know, when Alex says, oh, I want to talk to Dev and stuff, like I thought yeah. maybe, okay, we'll let this simmer for a second and then we'll sort of blow it up. But then they dove right in at the end of the episode, which makes me think we're not quite at the halfway point of the season, but we're pretty close. And it certainly feels like this is the point at which things start yeah. to get a lot worse.
Yeah. And in true For All Mankind fashion, we've got some space intrigue with the ships going to Jupiter. We've got political intrigue on Mars. It's continuing the theme from last year of who is Mars, who controls Mars, and who is Mars right. for. I think the other thing that is a dynamic that has only been touched on briefly, but is out there, is ISN, which they call ISIN, I guess,
yes.
which is weird. But the ISN group is also on Mars, and they are not beholden to the M6. And so you've got this like conspiracy of the M6 to get rid of all the people on Mars and ship them back to Earth. And, you know, probably they don't want to go. And then ISIN is a different entity. And
they
so
theoretically can't make those people go back, but they will just be economically driven out if
yeah.
there's nothing else there.
So my question is really like, we are setting up an interesting political, multipolar political issue where you've got two different Earth power blocks that are not in sync at all. And I would say ultimately the people on Mars. And I do think that it's very hard not to watch this show and think that the show is on the side of the people who live on Mars,
yes.
that ultimately
yes.
they need to decide it. I think that it's a really good philosophical question of like, do the Earth governments hold sway here or not? And if they do, how do they? Because they're so far away from their power base. And that fundamental question of like, should Mars ultimately not be for people who live on Mars?
Yeah. I am most fascinated, I think, as I said earlier, to see there's a final shot of Dev as the news breaks. And it's hard to read. I don't think it's ambiguous, right? Is this, oh, my secret plans have gotten out? Or is, I can't believe this is happening? Because he's talked this whole game about building a giant self-sustaining Mars city. But the documents are like, well, within 5 years, everyone will be gone, right? We're going to replace almost
yeah.
everybody. We're going to ship them, literally
ship them back to Earth.
And if that's true, then Dev's whole city thing
yeah.
is just
so,
smoke and mirrors.
So
it's him lying.
This is my theory. My theory is that Dev has a plan, right?
Yes.
And that
right.
and that Alex isn't going to like the plan, but like that Dev is going to, my theory is Dev is going to come to Alex and say, you don't get it. You don't get what I'm trying to do
yeah,
here.
He's talking out both sides of his mouth, right? Mm-hmm. He's making a deal on the one hand because
yeah. he's going to betray the deal, right? I think
100%.
That's what I predict for Dev is that Dev doesn't actually believe it. This automation thing. I mean, Dev doesn't even like Kerrigan, right? Like I
yes,
think this
right.
is
why
a
make
setup
a deal? Yeah.
By Dev, and he might even, who knows, maybe even is talking to ISIN about this because in the end he's a businessman. What does he care about? But like, there is no way that Dev is like, yeah, 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 we'll ship all the people off of Mars. In fact, he may be thinking, this is how I get my city.
Yes.
Is the M6 doesn't want people on Mars anymore. And he's like, great, I do. And then yeah. he takes them and like, and we are not under your control anymore. Remember also, Dev is mad because he believes, I think correctly, that political shenanigans gave the contracts for the space elevator to Kerrigan.
Yeah.
When he deserved them. So I think Kerrigan is his enemy, and we're all big friends here. We're doing work on Mars, but like, I don't believe that for a minute either. I think, yeah. I think Dev is only loyal to Dev and his vision of Mars. He is down on the M6 because they chose Kerrigan. He's down on the governor because he's a plant of the Soviets. He's down on Kerrigan because, and Kerrigan, I would say also, we don't know a lot about this, but it seems like Kerrigan is doing all the dirty work.
Right. They're shipping stuff under the radar. And is he using Kerrigan itself as like a proxy or like,
or a patsy,
like a patsy, a stalking horse? I don't know. Like, there's a lot there. Dev is an operator, right? We know that.
I don't think Dev is like, yep, you got us, we have the plan, right? I think Dev is like, he's gonna have a counter plan that he's working
wheels.
And he may be very angry at Alex for doing it now, although this show does have a long track record of him being like, Alex, you did that, the time wasn't right, but we could make it work, right? Like, just do that bit. Yeah. I'm like, we'll make it work,
don't worry, I'll figure it out.
So good. So I would say, just like the ship going to Titan, season 5 of For All Mankind has taken flight now.
Yep. Yeah, there's lots to come, lots of I would say balls in the air, but it's space, so no air. So lots of
Mars. I know planets are in space. This is the thing we learned about the incomparable. One thing the incomparable taught us is the planets are actually in space.
Technically.
So if you are on a planet like Earth or Mars, you are in space. But yes, there are a lot of balls in the thin Martian atmosphere, slowly falling in the lower gravity to the ground. And one ball has escaped and is on its way to Titan. We're rolling. We're 4 out of 10 with this. So much more drama
on the halfway point.
Yeah. So, I guess that's it. We will be back next week to talk about episode 5, the halfway point. Whoa, wild stuff. But until then, do svidaniya, Dan.
Do svidaniya, Jason.